Case number 221947, Geometrics LLC versus NSF International et al. Appellant not to cede, 15 minutes per side. Mr. Allard and Mr. Revis, you may proceed for the appellant.
Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, Devin Allard, on behalf of Plaintiff Appellant Geometrics LLC, and I'm also joined by my colleague Daniel Ravitz today. I will be handling argument with respect to the antitrust claims, and Daniel will handle the remainder of the claims. I've reserved 7 minutes for my argument and 3 for rebuttal, and Daniel has reserved 5 minutes for argument.
But no rebuttal.
No rebuttal.
Very good.
It is well recognized that standard-setting organizations are rife with opportunities for anti-competitive activity. As the instructive case of Allied Tube versus Indian Head, that's 486 U.S. 492 states, there's no doubt that members of trade associations often have economic incentives to restrain competition and that product standards set by such associations have a serious potential for anti-competitive harm. With respect to the antitrust claims, the district court erred when it found, one, that plaintiff lacked standing because its claims regarding proposed standards were not ripe, and two, even if standing existed, that the Knorr-Pennington Doctrine protected defendants from liability because defendants' conduct amounted to nothing more than what the court called a public relations campaign aimed at state regulators. As to the ripeness issue, the court found that the plaintiff has not been injured by the proposed standards that are not finalized or adopted. But it's not just about whether the standards are ever formally adopted. What the court missed is that there are many ways individuals can use the standard-setting organizations in a predatory way to cause harm to the market.
Doesn't that at least distinguish Allied Tubing, the main case you rely on? Because as I understood the allegations in Allied Tubing, it was that they affirmatively got a rule adopted that excluded the product. And that didn't take place here. You'd admit that Standard 40 always included your product, and it was really just the speech besmirching or criticizing the general product that is the problem. And it was largely that speech directed to regulators. And that makes this case somewhat different from Allied Tubing, because there it was speech directed to the standard-setting entity itself.
Well, I believe some of the speech was directed towards state regulators too, but what's important about Allied Tube is that it found that the process was unfair.
But you would concede it was the process to exclude the plastic tubing or whatever, and it did successfully exclude plastic tubing from the standard-setting organization certification.
Right, it was this.
But that didn't happen here. Your product was accepted under Standard 40.
Our product was accepted under
Standard 40. So that makes it. Allied Tubing is accepted. Knorr-Pennington is about speech to regulators. When your competitors are speaking in a way that is directed towards the standard setting entity, that's different. But here, you're saying the standard setting entity itself was in on it, and it was conspiracy to kind of just belittle the product to, most directly, the state regulators.
It was many things. It was using the
process. Well, who else?
I'm sorry, what is it?
Who else was the speech directed at?
Oh, it's directed to consumers? It's directed to the industry?
And with respect to consumers, I certainly agree. You say that in your complaint, but do you think that satisfies Iqbal Twombly? Do you have any specific allegations other than just general allegations of speech issuing these reports that are critical of the product directed to state regulators and generically and consumers?
I think there's no question that some of the conduct by the defendants may very well be viewed as protected by Knorr-Pennington, but it's the actual process manipulation which is definitely not going to be protected. That there's more than one way to use the standard setting process in order to cause competitive harm.
What is the process harm? Isn't it the speech that's directed to outside parties? Or?
Well, that's certainly part of it.
But what else?
There's more. They're stacking the committees with competitors, which violates due process rules in the NSF standards for balance.
But that doesn't matter unless it leads to an outcome that's harmful to you. And the obvious outcome would be the one that is in Allied Tubing, is the stacking the competitors leads to a decertification of your product. But that didn't happen here.
Right, but they're still damaged through the process, because what's happening is they're using the process to delay and cause harm that way. We're shut out of the market, essentially, while this process goes through, and while they're, it's a bunch of flip-flopping is what's happening here. They say you are eligible for this standard, and then 5 years later, you know what, you're not eligible. We're going to move to remove you from the standard, and now let's put you in this other standard.
But that never happened, right? I mean, the certification under Standard 40 continued, and even though there was discussion about putting your product in Standard 441, it never occurred, right?
That's correct. We're not in Standard 441.
Okay, so we're trying to figure out what's the harm here, and your complaint talks about you were unable to receive approvals by state regulatory agencies, and you experienced difficulty in obtaining regulatory approval from the state regulatory agencies. Well, that's what I see as the harm here, and the problem, I think, is that Norr Pennington gives immunity if the allegations are of interference with a state regulatory agency, and I think that's what the harm is that you're alleging here. What's wrong with that analysis?
Well, that's,
I mean, I'm reading from your complaint.
Certainly, Your Honor. That's not the only harm. It's not just about petitioning. There's more. There's using the actual process to delay and keep us out of the market longer. It's basically a shell game.
Well, the delay is in the approval of state regulatory agencies, isn't it?
The delay is in the standard setting field with the committees.
Well, I mean, you've already got the approval under Standard 40, so the private agency, even though there's attempts to revoke it or attempts to modify it, they haven't been successful, so you still have the certification until you withdraw it. So, I'm looking at what the causation is, what the harm is, and they've got other activities, but did it cause any harm? And it's hard to see that it did.
But with respect to Standard 40, we did withdraw from it because it became useless due to the disparagement. And I would say that the harm there was the defendants making it useless, not...
Useless to the state regulatory agencies?
Useless.
That you wanted to be approved by?
It became useless for my client, Geomatrix, because it was so disparaged and slandered and devalued that the mark and the certification meant nothing anymore.
To who?
To consumers and to the state regulators.
Do you have any cases other than Allied, which Judge Murphy's asked you about, that doesn't seem to be on all fours with this? Do you have any other cases that you're relying upon that talk about this process claim? I'll just pick out one of the things that you said, stacking of the committee with competitors?
Yeah, that is the Allied Tube case, generally. And I see that my time is up, and I...
But what is it in Allied Tube that you drive focuses on the stacking? It might have been a fact in Allied, but as Judge Murphy took you through, Allied is a whole different situation. The standard was promulgated, and it was used to exclude somebody.
Well, in Allied, they recognized that the process could be...
You read Allied to say it could be a standalone claim. That's the answer?
Yes, I read Allied that way.
Okay, that's what I want to know. Thank you.
And in Allied, they don't, nor Pennington does not extend to conduct such as stacking process.
All right, Mr. Allard, you could use your 3 minutes rebuttal time now, or you could save it.
I'd like to reserve it, please.
All right, very, very well.
And now
I'm your co-counsel.
My colleague, Mr. Ravitz. Thank you.
Good morning. Hey.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thank you, and may it please the Court. As my colleague, Mr. Allard, said, I'd like to focus on the remaining business tort claims, in particular on just two of those claims, fraud and promissory estoppel. We believe that these claims present very limited issues that could could allow the court to reverse and remand. NSF, as to do with these two claims, made false statements in writing on its impartial pro-competitive procedures to induce Geomatrix to participate in those processes, including the ongoing process around Standard 441, which continues today, and to induce Geomatrix to forbear from further action, while NSF's best customers, like its co-defendants, use this delay to strengthen their market positions. These policies are expanded on, for example, in paragraphs 483A through G of the complaint. And I'll focus first on North Pennington, if I may. This doctrine doesn't apply to these claims because they both address injuries Geomatrix suffered based on misstatements that were made completely outside of petitioning activity. Allied 2, among other things, tells us that we should look to see the arena in which statements are made when we're judging whether or not a statement is protected by the First Amendment. This is not an instance where a political fight occurred and one group or the other will get hurt by the arguments that are made.
Do you think there's a mismatch, though, between that theory and your theory of damages? Because I take your complaint not to be suing over... So your theory of fraud is that we bought a bad product, the product being, I guess, a service or whatever you want to describe it. You wanted to be within Standard 40, and you essentially bought Standard 40. And so usually when you buy a bad product, the damages are like a return of the funds for the product, but that's not the damages you're seeking. You're not seeking a return of the funds you spent to NSF. You're seeking the wider market harms that were caused by other speech, by the questioning of your product. So why would the fraud about how NSF is going to help you allow for that type of broader damages? I guess this is type of goes to the proximate cause point.
I think that's a fair question. You know, we would point to, you know, among other things, my colleague pointed to consumer harm in the marketplace, and I would point out we've alleged that NSF, in its articles of incorporation, stating its purpose, states that its marks are not just meant for regulators; they're meant for public protection and benefit.
That's my point. You're trying to get out of North Pennington not by pointing to those reports, which may or may not have gone to consumers as well as the government, but you're saying you're not relying on those reports. You're relying on the statements that NSF made to Geomatrix. Those are different statements. So it seems to me if you're relying on the different statements, that leads to a different harm of you would not have even gone through the process to begin with of Standard 40, but you're not suing for the damages associated with buying NSF's, you know, shoddy product. You see what I'm saying?
I do, Your Honor. Thank you. You know, and I would actually slightly contest that. I think we are suing to rectify the harm that we faced after we were induced to participate in this long, drawn-out process where we're in 40 and then we're disparaged out of 40. Then we're in 441.
Disparaged out of 40. You withdrew from 40, right?
We withdrew from 40, but we withdrew from 40 after it became something that was less than useless to us. It became a certification that a consumer who looked further into it would see that NSF and the co-defendants had essentially said, this has no place in Standard 40. It doesn't have the proper odor. It doesn't have the proper color. These are human waste treatment products. These sorts of statements are the kind of things that a reasonable consumer would look at and I think rightfully be concerned if they were true, but they weren't. And that's the essence of our claim, is that on fraud and on promissory estoppel, that we were induced to participate in processes that we were told would act in a certain way, in a very specific way, in a very specifically pro-competitive way. And I see that my time is up, Your Honors. But thank you for your time this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, Patrick McCarthy on behalf of NSF International. While there are other defendants in this case, I'll be speaking on behalf of all the defendants
all right.
today.
Very well.
I'd like to begin with the Norah Pennington doctrine. I think it bars all claims here. The harm that we're talking about is harm that results from government action. You know, NSF petitions the government to adopt its standards. In this case, it was actually very unique because you actually had the regulators that were part of the Joint Committee, part of the committees that are at issue. And if you look at paragraph 145 of the amended complaint, they actually admit that. They say NSF on its own and through the Joint Committee and task groups disseminated this information by publishing it to state regulatory agencies. So, you know, this petitioning protected activity was part of the process here. In addition to that, NSF obviously tries to get regulators to adopt the standards, but they have them part of the process as well. Sometimes NSF is successful in getting a state or a local regulatory agency to adopt the standards. Sometimes it does not. Sometimes the regulators say, hey, we'll adopt standard 40, for example, but we're going to have these five other additional requirements. That's government action. That is what caused any harm here, if there was any harm to be had. The Massachusetts...
I'm interested about the nature of Norah Pennington. If you view it as just a gloss on the antitrust laws, so those cases were engaged in statutory interpretation of the meaning of vague phrases like restraint of trade, would it necessarily expand beyond the antitrust laws? It's not obvious to me that we need First Amendment glosses on well-established common law claims like fraud. Fraud has been around since the founding of this country, and nobody thought a traditional fraud claim would cause any First Amendment concerns. So why would we think that the First Amendment has affected a plaintiff's ability to recover for fraud?
Well, I think the Michigan Court of Appeals in two different cases has spoken to that topic and did in fact find that the Norah Pennington extends to, you know, the state law claims. The Azar case that we cited in the J&J construction.
Did they say that in particular with respect to fraud as well?
There was tortious interference. Whether it was fraud or not, I'd have to, in all honesty, double check whether that was a fraud case. I don't know, but I think in general it applies to the business torts and fraud is in fact.
So what's the... I can see it for like maybe novel torts or something that weren't around at the time of the First Amendment, but fraud has been around forever. And just like, you know, this is it sounds like you're asking us to adopt something like New York Times v. Sullivan for defamation, but we're doing it for fraud. We think that speech needs breathing space, so we need to remove traditional common law claims or change them.
Yeah. Well,
we're governed by Michigan law here, right?
We are.
So we do look to the Michigan Supreme Court, but if we don't have authority there, we look to the Michigan Court of Appeals.
Right.
And I mean, I agree with you that the Michigan Court of Appeals has ruled that Norah Pennington does apply to state law tort claims. I have to look at to see whether that actually was a fraud case, but. Right.
I think it's also important to look in the context in which we're dealing here. You know, NSF is a standard-setting organization. It's also a certification body. It has a separate arm that does that. NSF provides the forum in which folks can debate and decide what should be a standard, what changes should be to the standard. NSF doesn't decide that. The Joint Committee decides that. NSF provides that forum for the debate and the discussion. All First Amendment activities. And I think, you know, as to the fraud count here, if you look at that, NSF did nothing wrong. They provide the forum, the platform in which this is going to be debated. NSF didn't make any false statements about it. It's an open process. NSF is ANSI certified. You know, they comply with all of those requirements. There's really no debate about that.
What do you make of their theory that their complaint against you is not the speech to the regulators, it's your allegedly fraudulent speech to them, that you would support them if they applied for your standard, and in fact you did the opposite. You criticized them and criticized their product. Well, that wouldn't be speech that would be subject to Norah Pennington, would it?
I would say there's no fraud here. NSF offers a certification program to Standard 40, as well as many other programs. It's not a guarantee that regulators are going to adopt their product. It's a standard of minimum requirements. And if you meet the standard requirements, you get certified. There's no representation that, hey, you're going to, if you get NSF standard certified, that New Jersey is going to approve you, Michigan's going to approve you. It's just not there. So there's really no fraudulent or misrepresentation to them.
So that would be a different claim. You're just saying they didn't state a fraud claim then.
Yeah, they don't state a fraud claim. I mean, it's just not there.
Did you argue that in your brief?
Yes, we did. I think on pages, I think it's like 41 to 42, I think we deal with it. But we're in a protected it's protected activity here, you know, and they're trying to basically say NSF disparage T&D systems. All it did was provide a forum in which this can be discussed and debated.
Well, they got. How about the co-defendants? I mean, how about the co-defendants?
Well, yeah. Well, with respect to the co-defendants, Your Honor, I think it's important to look at. There are 42 different, you know, competitors in this industry. Biomicrobics and Hoot are just two of 42. To say that they did something to dominate and to cause this joint committee, which is made up of regulators, academia, industry folks, it's just not plausible for that to have occurred. This is not like those cases where you had a committee or an organization dominated by one set of folks. I mean, you've got all the stakeholders. You know, NSF is a nonprofit. They're a public health and safety company. They come together to do the right thing and to get all of the right stakeholders so that they can have that debate and get to the right answer. Hoot and Biomicrobics, you know, just didn't do anything that could have changed anything here.
No causation, maybe.
Right, no causation. I do want to address just on the Norr Pennington briefly. In the reply brief, they argued that there was public reposting of these issue papers, et cetera. If you actually look at the complaint, that is nowhere alleged anywhere in the complaint. So that's not supported, and to the extent that's an argument that you look at is waived. Just want to touch briefly on subject matter jurisdiction here. We have two issues. You got Standard 40, which is an existing standard. Sometimes there are modifications of the standard over time, but the facts here as to Standard 40, there was no change to Standard 40 to give different testing depending on the systems. It just wasn't changed. There was discussion about it at the task group level, but it never went anywhere. And for it to go anywhere, it has to go up to the joint committee for the joint committee to make a change. And frankly, nothing happened there.
Do you see a disconnect between your argument that the claims aren't ripe and your argument that the claims are untimely? How can a claim not even have accrued, but also already have accrued for so long that the statute of limitations bars the claim?
Well, I think it goes to the fact that they just don't state a claim in general. I mean, the fact that they are not ripe means there is no activity that was done on behalf of NSF or the other defendants that caused any harm. But they have alleged, you know, that the opposite, that there are in fact, you know, violations here. And you look back through the complaint, you've got allegations going back to 2007 for many of these claims. And if that's the case, and they say the harm was the issuance of issue papers or, you know, public statements, the harm occurred then. I mean, the regulators are right there. They're hearing it, right? And that's what they're saying devalued them and caused. I don't think there's a disconnect. The disconnect is from the complaint itself. It just doesn't state a claim one way or the other. So whether you look at it from it not being ripe or you look at it from there being, you know, barred by the statute of limitations.
I mean,
both are right.
Those are different issues. I mean, failure to state a claim, 12b-6, is a lot different than we don't have jurisdiction.
Sure.
So, all right.
With respect to the potential standard 441, I mean, I think you all know from the briefing, that's just being debated. I mean, it hasn't gone anywhere. It's speculative whether anything will change on that or whether there will be a standard. You know, NSF is not obligated to adopt a new standard. There's no timetable by which they have to do that. This is controlled by the Joint Committee. The Joint Committee and all of the academia regulators, industry folks, they discuss it. They figure out the timetable. And in here, there simply was not anything that is beyond speculation. And that overdrive case that we cited from 2021 from this court, I think, is controlling with respect to that.
How does the argument that you're making relate or not relate to Geometrics' process argument? Basically, they're saying you controlled the committee. You using their words, you stacked the committee. So on the one hand, you're saying, look, we didn't do anything. We've got this group of industry experts, and they do their own thing. They're saying you controlled that group. Now, whether that then leads to the question, assuming that it's even true, whether that then would impose any liability on NSF for essentially these fraud claims.
NSF doesn't control that. NSF abides by the ANSI requirements to have adequate balance on the committee, and there's due process requirements for that. That's why it has every stakeholder that is relevant, right?
Who picks them? Who picks the people?
NSF is involved in the process. I mean, you reach out to folks to see if somebody is interested, and you go that way. Not everybody is raising their hands saying, you know, I want to do this. But you have to get a balance, and that's what NSF does. That's what ANSI requires when they audit NSF, to make sure that we're complying with those requirements. Is there that balance? And there is, in fact, that balance. To say that, you know, simply because we provide the forum in the process, you know, pursuant to the ANSI requirements, doesn't mean that we did anything wrong. I mean, we're providing a valuable service that has been recognized by the federal government, and we cited the various federal statutes on this topic. You know, governments can't do everything, and they rely on entities like NSF to help develop voluntary standards so that NSF can help industry and government do their job. And that's what happened here. You know, this issue of, you know, stacking the committee, I don't think there's any evidence of that. And number two, none of that caused any harm here because no action was actually taken. I mean, all the things that they complain about were at the task group level. Task group has no authority whatsoever to do anything in this. Only the Joint Committee. And the Joint Committee didn't take any action. Still hasn't taken any action. We haven't adopted different standard for T and D systems versus, you know, the black box systems. As of today, just like it was in 2018 when they withdraw, just like when in 2014 when they applied, all types of systems qualify under standard 40 and can get certified. And there's many that are still certified today. So they're basically claiming, hey, we don't see value in this certification. And they're upset because maybe some regulators decided not to approve their product. Well, the regulators in various states, as I said earlier, don't necessarily rely on just standard 40 or the standard 40 requirements. They have other requirements. And it's government action that caused any harm here, not any action that NSF did. NSF just provided the process in full compliance with the ANSI requirements. And it resulted in where we are today, which is just continued debate over should there be any changes to standard 40? There haven't been. Should there be a new standard, high strength standard 441? That's still being debated. It hasn't even got to the Joint Committee for which you can even make a decision. And that's why, you know, all of the cases that we cited and talked about show that these claims are not valid and not ripe. I am going to, I only got 30 seconds left. I would just say, I mean, there are many grounds upon which this court can affirm the trial court decision. I think the Norr-Pennington Doctrine does bar all claims. It's supported by federal and Michigan law. But you can also look at the failure to state a claim under the antitrust laws that we've cited. That's another independent basis upon which this court can and should affirm. I think that's adequately briefed, and unless your honors have any further questions.
Any further questions, Judge McKee? Yeah.
Judge Murphy. Appreciate your
Thank
time.
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy.
Thank you.
Mr. Allard, you have 3 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to Nora Pennington, what I'm hearing is their position is you can do whatever you want in the standard setting process. You can stack the decks. You can ignore the due process rules. And as long as you shoot a couple emails to the government, well, now it's all lobbying and it's protected. That can't be right, and I believe Allied 2 says that you can't do that. On the statute of limitations issue, we allege that the conspiracy started in 2017. We plead facts going back many, many years for background information and for context. But our allegation is that an overt act took place in 2017, and that was the intentional attempt to remove T&D systems from Standard 40. That was a big step. And certainly, I believe it's a question of fact that shouldn't be dismissed at this stage. We'd love to prove it and get some discovery on it. I think there was a suggestion that that NSF didn't publish any papers or anything to customers or potential customers. Rather, it all went to the government. I direct you to paragraph 398L of our complaint, which states that NSF provided a forum for its employees and participants to disparage T&D systems and publishes those untrue statements to regulatory authorities and Geomatrix's customers and potential customers.
I thought that said and meant that it was the participants that you're claiming distributed things, not NSF itself.
Well, it says NSF provides a forum. That's the allegation.
Well, I understand they provide a forum, but that doesn't, does that ipso facto mean that NSF is responsible for everything that members of the forum do?
Well, I think participants, we're co-conspirators would be a better word. And if we're allowed to amend the complaint.
Is that alleged?
That's our allegation, yes.
So NSF as an entity is conspiring with the competitors of Geomatrix that are part of this task force. That's
absolutely
the claim.
Yes, Your Honor.
And where do we look in the complaint again for evidence that there is actually a conspiracy that involved the standard-setting body itself? Another way of saying that is, why would NSF care one way or the other? Understand that the competitors on the task force could arguably have a motive of disparaging your client's product, but NSF, I don't get it. Why do they care?
Sure, it's one of the plus factors we argued, and that's motive, and that NSF wants to appease its most lucrative customers, which in the wastewater industry is by far the ATU systems manufacturers, the old guard, not the new technology.
Because they arguably benefit from this anti-competitive conduct of competitors on the task force. Therefore, there's a conspiracy?
That's one part of it. And we allege conspiracy and agreement in at least paragraph 9, paragraph 138, paragraph 109, and paragraph 222.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Allard. Any further questions, Judge McKeague?
No.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. The case will be submitted.